everybody. This has been a strange beginning for tonight's show, and you might have already heard some sounds of like an airport terminal. Good to go, take it five, whatever. But whatever, we are now on the air, and this is Patricia Corey welcoming you to my show, Beyond the Matrix, the show that asks you to dare to think beyond the box of convention and soar the eagles of free thought. And tonight we'll be doing that with a very special guest. But before I introduce him, I've just got a few announcements to make. One of them is a little bit sad. A dear friend of mine and a man well known to many Egypt enthusiasts, Hakim Arian, the last wisdom holder of the Keneshin wisdom, passed on the 23rd of August. And I want to take a moment and ask you to send a prayer, send love up into the ethos for this wonderful man who has given so much of his life to helping us learn the truth about Egypt. To me personally, it's a great loss, and I will miss him so much. Now, on a happier note, I would like to also let you know that the journeys are going stronger and stronger, and we now have Egypt coming up. We've got Mexico, the sacred site of the Mayans, coming up. So do check my site, www.SyrianRevelations.net, to keep abreast of what I'm up to. It's going to be a very, very busy year, and I hope to see more of you with me in all of these sacred site locations. And we'll be talking about a journey that I've recently done tonight with my guest, Nick Ashron. How do I describe this man? He's a wonderful man. He's my friend, and I'm honored to be his. And he is a psychic artist, a musician, a writer, an all-around beautiful soul with whom I've spent some time in England in the crop circles at the sacred sites. And I thought it would be wonderful to have him on to learn more about his insights and experience during these two journeys that I've shared with him. So let me introduce him once again. Nick Ashron, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Patricia?
Hello, darling. Sorry for that little skirmish at the beginning trying to get the line set up. But I do hear you well now, and how about you?
I hear you too. That's cool, and I'm just wanted to say I'm very honored that you had me on your show.
Well, it's an honor for me.
Thank you.
So now we're in a mutual love zone. Let's see. I don't even know where to start with you, kiddo. How we met is interesting, but let's go back to basically, what do you do? I mean, how is it that you spend so many months out there in the region of the crop circles, and how far back does this go?
Were you talking about the crop circles specifically?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, my first awareness of crop circles was back in when they first came down around the 1980s, and obviously I was intrigued by it and have made sort of over the years frequent journeys to see whatever it is, you know, that's turning up. The last 2 years, however, I was very fortunate, ever since I bought myself a camper van, to actually hang out the whole summer, more or less, because most of my work is at mind, body, spirit fairs at the weekends, so I can afford to trundle off to do those and then go and base myself back in Avebury. So last summer and this summer just gone, I've been able to stay in the Avebury area most of the season, catching most of the crop circles that have been coming down.
So you can, in essence, say that you are one free spirit.
Sorry?
You can essentially say that you are one free spirit.
Well, yeah, I guess I am now, yeah.
Well, congratulations. So am I, actually, and it feels good.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been very fortunate to be able to do the work that I do, although, you know, there was a lot of early leg work and a lot of trusting and a lot of living on the edge, but, you know, that's enabled me to do occupations that I love, but also allows me a lot of free time.
Well, I think that you are an example of what we all need to learn, which is to let go of some of these needs for possession and what we think is security. And when you say living on the edge, you're surely an example of a person who does that and does it with elegance.
Yeah, well, mine kind of like, you know, it kind of happened. Everything was pulled away from me. The rug was taken out from underneath. Everything that meant anything that was external to me that meant security was like whipped away in one go. It wasn't very a pleasant experience, I have to say, but was a powerful teacher and taught me to find that inner security and that place where regardless of where I am, I'm always home.
Indeed. And you want to share with the audience how we met, which is just so great?
Well, how we met? Well, I became aware of your books about probably a few months before I actually met you and totally resonated with the information because in my own personal journey and guidance from spirit, and the information just so resonated with the kind of things that I'd been made aware of. So I was instantly felt a strong resonance with your books and the information. And then I saw that you were going to be talking at the Glastonbury Symposium, and that was the only reason I went there. You were the only person I wanted to go down and speak to. And, of course, if you remember, I walked up to you and just when everybody had finished talking to you, and I said, oh, I wonder if I might have a moment of your time, and you turned around and said, are you Nick Ashron? Do you remember that?
I remember saying, are you Nick?
Well, I'm sure it was Nick or Nick Ashron, and I, anyway, yeah, and I was like, what? How do you know that?
Yeah, anyway, I don't think I was as precise as saying Ashron, but I do remember saying, are you Nick? And I remember your face was about 50 different shades of confused.
Absolutely.
It was a wonderful meeting.
Yeah, and then we met again in a crop circle, didn't we?
We met in a few that year, didn't we?
Yeah, but after the Glastonbury Symposium, you were doing a tour with folk at the crop circles, and we bumped into each other several times and had a chance to converse further.
Exactly, and a wonderful friendship was born. So tell me, what, you know, that year you were touring around with another friend of mine, Patty Greer. What were you up to with Patty?
Well, Patty was wanting to make her own film about her experience at the crop circles, and you get to meet loads of wonderful folk, as you know, when you're down looking at crop circles, friendships strike up. Everyone's out on the same mission to find the latest crop circle, and everybody goes off in convoys to track them down. And she wanted to make a movie of her experience, and she just wanted to include me and my take on things in her movie, as well as using some of my music in her movie, which she eventually did.
And the movie is a wake-up call, which she took from the subtitle of my book, is anyone listening?
Call, yeah.
The wake-up call is anyone listening. It's a wonderful video, and if you're listening, Patty, I didn't deliberately set out to plug your video, but it's something you'll want to see, so check it out on Amazon.com. Patty Greer is the filmmaker. It's a beautiful, beautiful film, very gentle female approach to the magic of the circles and what's happening out there. So then that's when you met Patty, too. That was a very good year, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I met so many amazing people, and that's one of the things that I also like about, you know, it's not just going to see the crop circles. It's you get to meet all these individuals from all different walks of life, from backgrounds and interests, from the scientific to the esoteric to the way out to the wacky. And they're all such wonderful individuals. And part of it for me is like, you know, because I've always had this deep love of people ever since I was a child. I had this tremendous compassion and love for humanity, which is what drove me really to do the work that I'm doing.
And let's talk about the work that you're doing, because in my last group, a number of people came to you for a reading to have their, to get in touch with their spirit guide. So would you like to tell us a little bit how this was born and how you work, how you communicate with these spirits?
Well, right, okay. I guess just very, very quickly, my first awakening occurred when I was 8, when I was inspired by the stories of the healer Jesus, believe it or not, and that was my first, oh, I really want to be doing what he's doing. And it was as simple as that. And
that was a very high inspiration for an 8-year-old.
8 years old, yeah. Seriously, it was that profound. I want to be doing what he's doing. And because it was quoted to me from the Bible, from that source, that Jesus said, what I do, you can do, and much more, I just totally accepted that. But obviously, in the years ensuing, I came a cropper because I would go to the church thinking I'm going to see healers, and then there wasn't any. I even questioned the priests or the reverends and said, where are the people doing the healing? To which response I got, only Jesus can heal. And I go, well, why did he say that then? Why did he say what he does we can do? And it was quite a confusing childhood through that period. And then later years, it wasn't until I got to the age of about 20 that I was introduced to people who are actually doing healing, which I totally embraced. And essentially, even though the diversity of my work now is channeling through art, channeling through music, because those are two of my natural talents that have always been with me since I was young, I still see what I'm doing as a healing. And in respect of first of all, I realized very quickly that music would be a powerful medium to transmit healing energy, so I simply made that intent. I didn't know if it actually was or not, and that was a question that was constantly in the back of my mind. Am I really doing this? Am I really channeling music from spirit? And then an amazing series of synchronicities transpired, which happened to coincide at the time when I'd been continually told about being able to do psychic art. Because I started writing a series of albums that had a specific theme, and then within a very short time, those themes manifested in my reality, which was quite a mind-blowing experience. In other words, there was a direct synchronicity between the themes that I was choosing and then a direct experience of it in my reality manifesting around me. And that was my confirmation, yeah, I must be channeling, you know. Mm-hmm. So with regards to the art side, you see, when I started, I had no idea who I was going to draw. It was suggested to me by a number of very close friends that were channels, mediums themselves, telling me that I was able to draw spirit guides. I have a talent for drawing faces because in my early career, I had my own portrait studio, and I had to draw a likeness of a person in full color in 20 minutes. So my skill in drawing faces was developed during that time, and that came into its own when it came to drawing spirit guides. But to me, in the beginning, it just felt like I drew this face. I just made it up because I didn't get any indication of a separate entity or any sense of anybody communicating anything to me. But what I came to realize was that the key, and this has become something that's very, very still a part of my greater understanding, is the power of intent. The fact that I have made the intent to spirit to be a channel through my music, through my art, and then eventually learning to just completely trust and allow it. Subsequently,
well, that's the formula.
Sorry?
That's the formula.
That's the formula, and it is so simple. I'm not saying it's easy.
Yeah, I mean, when you set the intention and then you allow it, you've really found the formula for manifesting immediately.
Yeah, it provides
the more you let go.
Absolutely trust. Yeah.
So
and that's very hard
what
for
is,
us humans, isn't it? Sorry?
Go ahead.
Sorry, you were saying?
I was going to say, so when you do a session with a person, what does this involve for you to be able to contact the spirit guide? Do you simply draw it, or do you also bring information through for these people?
Well, what basically happens is the understanding that I have is the moment an individual makes the request to me to draw line, we don't have one, we have a team of them. Their guides immediately respond to that request, link with my guides, and then channel it directly through my hands. I have no awareness of who I'm going to draw until I start drawing the picture. Now, over the years, because I've been doing this for 13 years now, gradually, I've started to become aware of who it is I'm drawing once it gets to a certain stage in the drawing. And now I'm actually able to provide information about who that guide is, why that guide is coming through to that person, and how they're going to work with them. In other words, give them a message from that guide in a reading that I do with the drawing of the guide. And I can do this absently. They don't have to be in my physicality. A lot of my work I do from people all over the world that I've never met. But the very fact that they've made the intention and made the request to me, their guides then facilitate that through me as their channel.
I see. So I'm sure you have a website, Nick. Would you please tell the audience what that is so that they can get in touch with you if they would like to do one of these things?
Yeah, and of course there's more information on there exactly how it all works. It's www.nickashron.com. nickashron.com.
Okay, great. All right, so you're doing these then one-to-one sessions, and you're also doing them remotely.
Yes.
And what about your music? Tell us more about how you've been inspired to come to bring this music through.
Well, all the music that I create is all based on the things that most inspire me. Ever since I was a child, I was always in trees. I loved trees. Something about trees was always a very, very important of my part of my life and still is. I spend frequent times in nature because I find it very, very nurturing to my well-being, which is, again, one of the important things that spirit have made me realize how important it is to be in our own well-being, because then our vibrations vibrate at their highest level, if you like, when we feel good about ourselves. So the nurturing of oneself has become very important. Now, the inspiration for me comes from those things that inspire me, and nature plays a very, very big part in that. A lot of my music is inspired by the various aspects of nature, the beauty of nature, the seasons and cycles of Mother Earth, but then that also reaches out to the universes beyond, the concept and idea of beings out there in the stars. These are all the inspirations that come through that I express in a musical way, in the hope that it takes a person on that journey themselves or takes them on their own journey, because that's far more valid, their journey.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was definitely going to say that I feel that you're definitely inspired by beings from the outer realms. And as much as, well, I suppose there's no difference between the inner realms of this beautiful earth and the outer space that we refer to. But there's a very galactic feeling about you.
Well, that's something that was, because you see, in parallel, in the early times, my interest in music and art, and the pursuit of the healings, the spiritual pathway, was a very, very important part of my journey. But in parallel with that was a fascination and interest in the whole UFO phenomena. I scored books after books, tracking down as much information I could about the whole UFO stuff. And then there was a meeting point of that which occurred when I did an album called Celestial Gateways. The two married, the spiritual pathway and the understanding of, you know, the star brothers and sisters out there, how it all came together, and it was a really, really potent awakening for me, and I actually have highlighted this in my very first book.
Okay, which leads us into the book. You're a very busy man. Tell me a little bit about the book.
Well, the book basically is the spiritual journey that started from the age of 8 and then through the guidance that came through my life at those different stages. I never set out to write a book as such. I had a period when I was very, very ill, a terrible flu, and I was like laid up for 3 days and nothing, I didn't know what to do with myself. Music didn't do it, telly didn't do it. And I found myself sitting there remembering something that happened many years ago when I was feeling very ill. I was up in London in a bedsit, tramping around the streets, knocking on people's doors, see if they wanted a portrait. And I got really ill, and I didn't have that much money, and I only had one of these electric bar fires, which eat money. I mean, like, an hour's worth of money is all I put in that fire. And I remember laying in bed feeling really wretched, and it was at the beginning of my understanding of spirit guides and all that, and I put out to spirit, I said, look, I feel really awful. I really could do with some help. If there really is something out there, can you help me? And what happened is that bar fire didn't go out for 3 days. The entire time I was in bed, this was in the middle of winter, the fire never went out for 3 days. And as soon as I was well, the fire went out. And I remembered that story, and suddenly I started to remember all these other profound incidences where there'd been spirit intervention. And before I know it, I had this whole array of material, and I thought all I've got to do is fill in the details and there's a book here. And the idea of the book is to inspire, empower the individual to look at their own story and where there's been guidance in their own life. That's the intent of the book, as well as empowering the individual, whatever knowledge and wisdom and tools that Spirit has shared with me that I've applied. Because, you know, it's about walking the talk. There's no point me saying things that I haven't personally experienced or I'm not walking the talk of. That's very important to me.
Mm-hmm. And the name of the book again?
I call the book By the Light of the Star. And the star essentially read... Sorry?
It's a great title.
Well, actually, it came from a song. I'd written a song called By the Light of the Star, and then I thought I'd make a nice title for the book. And it's essentially about you are the star. It's your higher self, allowing yourself to be guided by your own higher light, your own higher self, and becoming the star that you are, which is a title that I've used now for workshops that I'm starting to do, which is about empowering the individual, sharing with them the tools that have served me. Very simple tools, because to me the most profound spiritual truths are really simple. And I tend to relate to things very simply. I might be presented with a whole load of really awesome information that, like, wow, that's really amazing. But then I have to look at it and go, well, if I can't bring this down to a very, very simple understanding and then find a simple application that will enhance my daily here and now, it's all just a load of talk. And that's the way I tend to relate to it, bring things down to the simplest level, simplest understandings. You apply the tool, and if you apply it absolutely, it will work, like the intention, trusting, and allowing.
All right, so now let's shift away from that for a minute, and using this concept, let's talk about your understanding in all their simplicity of the crop circles. I know you're non-committal about what's really happening, because you allow, which I respect a lot, every interpretation. But I really would like to know, having had, you've had so much experience in the crop circles now, something about your perception of what's going on.
Well, my perception of the crop circles is they are multidimensional as we are. And there are multiple dimensional realities occurring all around us all the time. And so, in other words, all realities exist. And you hear all the stories of the, you know, the crazy conspiracy stuff. You hear all the stories of the other stuff. And it's a bit like, yeah, all these realities are existing and coexisting in the same space. Which one do you want to align to? Which one would you choose to be aligned with? Which one empowers you? And I think that the crop circles are multidimensional, in that each person will get whatever their personal experience is the most valid one. because there are individuals that can look at the same crop circle and come up with a whole mathematical explanation, or that some people look at it from a sacred geometry point of view and come up with a whole wonderful explanation. Other people don't need an explanation. They walk in and they get totally blown away and like, wow, they're in a state of bliss. I think there's something there for everybody, and your own personal experience is the most valid. Now, there is I believe there is something called a yantra. There is a mantra, which is a sound that you repeat, which creates a resonance, a frequency that enables you to access higher consciousness, yeah? That's called a mantra, isn't it? And I believe a yantra is a visual, geometric, highly complex geometric shape that when you meditate upon it, you also gain that higher level of consciousness. And I think that you don't even need to go into the crop circle to get something from it, because just by looking at the image of it, it communicates to that individual on an intuitive level. They will get whatever is appropriate for them from that on an intuitive level, because before we used words for language and communication, we used to use pictures. So here we have a pictorial image of something that, whilst you might not necessarily comprehend it from a rational mental, although some people do, you'll pick up on it intuitively. And definitely I see it as a co-creation between the earth consciousness, interdimensional beings, multidimensional beings, the star brothers and sisters. They're all, as far as I'm concerned, a part and parcel, and our own consciousness too, playing a part in the manifestation now of this incredible phenomena. That, I mean, it's amazing there's still a bit of magic in the world. You never know, that it might be another one tomorrow.
Yeah, how many, just, you told me that there are 5 new ones just down?
Yeah, I you know, you turn my back for a minute and what thinking happens? I've been in Avery for about 5 or 6 days, and nothing had happened, and I had to go away for the weekend just for like 3 days. And in that 3 days I was away, 5 circles appeared.
That's right. Are you headed back, or are you too far?
Well, no, I only heard about them the day before I was going to go back, so that was really cool. I thought, great, I'm going to catch them when I get back. And there was one particular one I really, really... See, I don't get energies from the crop circles myself. For me, it's pictorial. It's the visual image that attracts me to a crop circle. There are many crop circles I'll see, and I go, oh, I don't really feel like I want to go and see that one. There are others I look at it and go, oh, well, yeah, I really want to go to that one. And the particular one I really wanted to go to was actually cut down the very same day it appeared. So that was a
bit sad. Can you describe this one to the audience? Because I also saw this one, and it is quite remarkable. Fortunately, some of the flyers got pictures of it.
Yeah, of course, there's the CropCircleConnector.com, which has all the pictures, if people want to go on that website. It was a 7-pointed star with a whole series of multiple circles spiraling out from the center all around those 7 points. There was also some kind of inscription on one of the points of the star that I couldn't tell you exactly what that was, but it was a really beautiful laid down pattern.
It looked like an eye to me.
It did look like an eye, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the circles were in a spiral format, weren't they?
Spiraling out from the center around the 7 points of the star, yeah.
Yeah, let me just repeat this to everyone. You really want to take a look at this. www.cropcircleconnector.com. And you see, once you get on that site, it's broken down by month, and just look on late August, and you should be able to retrieve that image. Eastfield, correct?
Eastfield, the one you pointed to and said, there's going to be a crop circle in there, Nick.
Yeah, you want to tell everybody about that? That was quite amazing, and I'm really glad to be able to share that with people on the show.
Well, we were in the Swallows formation. When folk go onto the website, they'll see there was this awesome formation that's made up, looks like a series of swallows, tail to tail.
A beautiful formation.
And that formation kind of blew you away a bit, didn't it? You really got a buzz from that.
It was almost as powerful for me as the one at Stonehenge, the Julius set, which brought the Syrian High Council into my life.
Absolutely. And I remember you kind of like were phased out for a while, and I think you had a little snooze. And then when you woke up, you went, there's going to be a crop circle over there, and pointed to this particular field. Well, the very next day, there was a crop circle that appeared, but not in the field you pointed to. This one, the seven-pointed star one, has actually appeared exactly in the place you pointed to.
Wow. That's remarkable. So the other one appeared very close to where I pointed to.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it was a six-sided star.
Yeah, like a bubbly one.
And this is very important because in my workshop I teach a lot about Emoto and his work with water crystals and how the six-sided star is the perfection that every conscious molecule of water strives to achieve. So for it to have appeared the next day was pretty mind-blowing for me.
Oh, I mean, and what did you do? You ordered perfect sunshine, and you've taken all the sun from the summer. We've got miserable rain now.
Well, I told you I always bring the sun. I would be happy to have a little cooler weather in England when I come, because I bring people into the crop circles, and we die from the heat. In fact, that day, we almost had cardiac arrest because the sun was burning down, if you remember.
It was the hottest day. The hottest days that we've had in the summer, all summer, those 3 days, it was awesome.
It was hotter than Egypt. In England.
It was hotter in Egypt.
It was hotter than England, Egypt. It was hot,
well,
that's
Egypt.
All I have to say.
Well, yeah, Egypt would be hotter, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but you don't expect this kind of desert heat in England now, do you, darling?
No, we'd like it, though.
Well, as I told you, you asked the English government to set up some kind of a sun fund, and I'll come more often, because whenever I go to England, the sun doesn't, in fact, come out. It's very bizarre.
Well, actually, there was an interesting comment we made that you know, during this summer, that you could actually guarantee the appearance of a crop circle more than you could the appearance of the sun this summer. There was more likelihood of being a crop circle than the sun. Yeah.
It was very exciting to be able to manifest that and have had witnesses so that people can recognize the fact that there is this communication going on. And clearly, considering that I do work with the Syrians, clearly to me this was a message for. Particularly everyone was in my group. And anyone else who was within earshot, like you, you were kind of in the group, weren't you, in the end?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I thought I was. I hope I was.
You were indeed, and everyone loved you.
Oh.
And tell us a little bit more about the silent circle, because a lot of people do ask me, if I go to the club circle on my own, what do I need to know? And I've described this as being halfway between an Indiana Jones movie and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where everybody keeps making this mountain. They don't know why, but they can't stop. That's what it feels like to me when you go out on the crop circle trekking. You just know you've got to go, and you're in this rhythm, and you're not sure why, but you're there. I just wanted to ask you to talk about the Silent Circle Cafe, where you spend a lot of your time.
Well, because, I mean, the Silent Circle, it's not a cafe now, but the Silent
Circle
was set up by this wonderful guy called Charles Mallett, who had his own experiences of crop circles and thought that there should be a resource center, a center where that has a map of the area. And then as each crop circle appears, it's mapped on the map. People can then, instead of like driving around for hours in the car hoping they're going to see one, they can go to the Silent Circle Center. There's loads of resource books, DVDs, information on individuals' research from the scientific to the esoteric. But each crop circle is numbered, and there's a photograph put up there of the crop circle, so you can decide which ones you want to go and look, and there's the map, and all you've got to go down is follow the route on the map, and it's a really, really great meeting place as well for, you know, like-minded people. It has talks there as well from, you know, various individuals and all their particular take or understanding from the, again, from the scientific right through to the spiritual and esoteric. So, you know, it's a great meeting place, and you know, he's done an incredible job of keeping that going, often against, you know, impossible odds sometimes. And he has got his own website, the Silent Circle website.
Good. I was going to ask if we could give the name of the website out. Is it silentcircle.com?
I believe it is, yes, yes.
It's either silentcircle.com or silentcircle.co.uk.
Now you've got me, because I don't tend to go on the internet too much myself. But I think if you just Google Silent Circle,
yeah,
it'll come up.
And one thing I would like to say is that Charles does a wonderful job of keeping very neutral about everything, allowing everyone's experience and not having or verbalizing his own opinions, so that this is a beautiful place where you can come and just interact and meet people with every kind of experience and opinion about what's going on neutral ground.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, but he does close, doesn't he? He's closing now?
He's shut down now until next season, although that doesn't mean to say the crop circles have stopped, because, I mean, he closed down at the beginning, where are we? A week ago, and we've had 5 circles since then, and they could continue into the first couple of weeks of September. Last year, we had crop circles right through to the middle of September.
I didn't realize that. I thought this was pretty late for crop circles now.
One thing is, you know, they are starting to crop the fields now, so, you know, you've got to be kind of a bit quick to catch them, because it is the harvesting season. You see, the next harvest is linseed, and last year we had a number of crop circles turn up in linseed fields.
See, a lot of people don't know this information.
Yeah. You just got to hang out down Silent Circle.
Right, but I would recommend that the best time to go is basically between mid to late July through August. Would you agree?
No, because the first crop circles appear in rape, I think you'd call that canola, in as early as April.
Right, but we're not all free spirits like you who can simply go when we want to. So I'm talking about, if you decide to make a journey to England to go see the crop circles, the best time to go would be when?
June, July, August.
Yeah. That's what I think.
Being kind of the peak, really, the middle of it all. Because that's when the wheat fields are really sort of starting to, you know, come forth, all getting ready for a crop circle to appear in them.
Well, I think one good advice to give to people is look on the website of Crop Circle Connector and get a feel for when the most crop circles come down, and you can kind of gauge yourself from that.
I would say the most, you've got a load already. Mid-July is probably, July time is probably the peak of it, the best kind of time. But then, as I say, they do continue through August, and we've still had some really awesome, beautiful formations through August. As I say, the one last week, you know, here we are, you know, close to the end of August, but there was a really awesome crop circle that came down. But sadly, because it's harvesting time, it might not stay there too long.
Yeah, what a pity that very few people got in. Did anyone get into that?
There was a number of people that got in there in the morning. Charles was one of them. By the afternoon, they started harvesting by the afternoon. So fortunately, someone went up on a flight, and I was able to take a photograph of it at least, so at least we've got the the photograph. It was just fortunate that someone flew that day. Cause it's,
yeah, that was Philippe Olland, who is the
right.
owner of the hedge shop in Avebury,
right.
friend of mine.
Right, cool. But
he got the shot.
During the peak summertime, you know, June, July, early August, there are people usually going up on the little microlight flights every day. So they're obviously the ones that first get to spy the circles and then report them. But as it's getting later in the season, there haven't been so many people and the weather hasn't been too good to fly either. So we were really
yeah.
lucky to get a picture of that one on that day.
We were indeed. Tell me, Nick, we would agree that most of them come down in a triangular space, Wiltshire, between Stonehenge, Glastonbury and Avebury, and that Avebury seems to be kind of the hub of the action. Now, can you tell us about the white horses that are on the hills as well?
I'm not really the best authority on the white horses. I mean, there's about five or six white horses on the hills around the Wiltshire area, and some of them are actually not that old, you know, maybe 18th century. One of the oldest
ones. See, they look older than that.
Yeah. And, you know, some of them were just, you know, relatively recent from that point of view. One of the oldest ones is the one at Uffington, the Uffington White Horse.
The one that looks like something like a dragon.
Well, and some people even think that it might not even be a horse, that it might be a dragon. Absolutely. And that's,
yeah, it looks like a dragon to me.
That's about 4,000 years old. Now, I'm not really the expert on the history of you know, the white horses, but when people ask me, I say, well, you know, in those days they had white horses appear on the hills. Now we've got crop circles.
Yeah, those were a little bit more permanent, though. Are they carved into the rock?
Sorry?
Are they carved into the rock?
They're kind of marked out in chalk. And they are maintained. There are people that maintain them so they don't grow over, but it's a particular chalk that they're kind of marked out in. Because there is a,
but
it's
a
very
chalky base, right?
Sorry?
It's a chalky base as far as the earth goes.
Well, this is one of the interesting factors because there's a guy called Andy Thomas. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I know him.
Crop circle research for 13 years that explained that all around that particular area and all the way up a bit further north in England, there is a particular kind of chalky base under the ground that holds a lot of water, and it seems that the crop circles seem to appear on those particular locations. Therefore, there being, you know, various individuals believe there is some strong connection with the water in the formation of the circles.
Well, what I've been told by my guides is that in this part of the world there's a very high water table under the earth.
Right.
The images or the geometry, what the council calls the cosmometry, is sent down into the water, not the wheat.
Right.
And the water, which has the incredible memory, imprints,
yeah.
the image gets imprinted in the water, and as it's coming into the water becomes magnetized, pulls it down, and the crop gets pulled, flattened by the interaction of the electric energy, which is the message coming in, down into the earth, and then the water, the magnetic,
right.
which pulls it down. And that's how the
right.
crops
right.
come down. Which
well,
is pretty exciting.
That sounds cool to me. I like that one.
And we can imagine how we can do this with our own cells in our body when we send the electric, because we know that the brain is a neural transmitter. When we send the message into the cells of our body, we can manifest certain geometries in the cellular makeup of the waters of our body.
Well,
hence,
absolutely.
The work
I mean,
that Emoto is doing.
Exactly. I mean, his images of the water crystals when they're subjected to different emotions and, you know, the powerful positive emotions created the absolutely awesome geometry, whereas the negative
exactly.
emotions created this sludge. I mean, yeah,
I think this is a very important correlation with the crop circles that we need to remember how we use our mind determines what we manifest. And we say this over and over again throughout the centuries in different expressions, but nonetheless it is the key absolutely to perfecting our lives.
Absolutely. I mean, it, just taking, you know, the idea of the water and the work that, his name, Emoto?
Emoto.
Oh, Emoto, yeah. I mean, our bodies are what, 90% water, 85, 90% water?
Yeah, about 80.
So every thought that we have, depending on what the emotion behind it is going to, is going to affect that water in the same way that it's affected the water crystals, and that in itself is an absolutely awesome concept. Furthermore,
well,
the research...
Going back to what you said earlier about, you, when you were talking about your own work and you kept saying your intention was, and
yeah.
I, too, use this message in all of my teaching, which is it's the intention that determines the thought, and it's the thought
yeah.
that alters the matter.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
That intention of what you wish to create is what gets created. And this is the basic principle of mind over matter.
Absolutely. And therefore, it's highly, highly recommended to monitor your thoughts, to be sure that whatever thoughts you're putting out in each moment is not carrying intentions that are not, that might be detrimental. And that's certainly been a part of my journey where I've had to really, really listen to what I'm saying in my head, what possible intentions that are there that I actually don't really want to manifest. So it's not like, right, just be really clear. But this is all a part of living in awareness, isn't it?
Yeah. And actually, the work of spiritual mastery, in my humble opinion, forget all the glitz and all the channeling and all the hype around this basic aspect of life, which is your spiritual journey. In the
yeah.
end, it's about mastering your thoughts, setting the intention in every moment for a deliberate, clear, higher good. To me,
absolutely.
This is really spiritual mastery.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because, you see, you know, irrespective of all this wonderful, wonderful stuff that we're very, very privileged to be aware of now, and all the great, wonderful stories of the different star cultures and all that, if we were to take that all away and just be left with those simple principles and tools that you can apply in your here and now that would enhance your well-being, that's what it's about, isn't it?
Indeed it is. And I'd like to make a suggestion as we start to close our already one-hour show here that perhaps what we're seeing in the crop circles is higher mind communicating
right.
to the waters of the earth being, showing us how we manifest on this earth. Higher mind linking with the water, creating the dynamics and the geometry in the water, and then plus manifesting on Earth.
Absolutely.
It's like a macrocosmic symbol and demonstration of what we do in our own physical being in every
yeah.
cell of our body.
Absolutely, I'll go with that.
Well, we got a little bit more serious, no pun intended, as the show went on. All right, ladies and gentlemen, once again, believe it or not, it's almost time to go. We've been speaking with my dear friend, Nick Ashron, psychic artist, musician, writer, crop circle enthusiast, and free spirit. His website is www.nickashron.com. You'll want to check him out. Goodbye to my friend Nick. I'm sure that I'll have him back on sometime soon. And in the meantime, you can find him at most of the mind, body, spirit fairs in the UK. He's all over the place, bringing his wisdom and his art and his music out, and try to catch him. And for me, I've got next week, don't miss this show, I've got Annette Martin on. Her book is The Gift of the White Light. She is a psychic detective involved with helping the police, even the FBI, resolve so many crimes. It's going to be a dynamite show. Don't miss that. And again, please don't forget to come and check out my site. I've always got news on there, www.SyrianRevelations.net. See you soon. Don't forget, keep your mind in the free thought zone. Don't be fooled by the image. Dig down deep to get to the truth. And that applies particularly today to the political arena that is diverting our attention. Just had to get a political remark in there. Keep your eyes open. Don't be buffaloed. Get to the truth. Love you. See you next week. Bye-bye.